This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. Today on the program, we look at why people in the U.S. continue to pay more for health care than any other industrialized country. Annually, tens of thousands die from lack of health care, and President Obama is now proposing cuts in Medicare. First, we interviewed Dr. David Himmelstein, professor in CUNY School of Public Health at Hunter College and co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Program. And during the second half of the show, we'll talk to Dr. Margaret Flowers, a pediatrician from Baltimore who served as congressional fellow for PNHP. Please stay with us. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. Today on the program, we look at why people in the U.S. continue to pay more for health care than any other industrialized country. Annually, tens of thousands die from lack of care, and President Obama is now proposing cuts in Medicare. Well, this morning's guests are going to deconstruct and demystify a lot of this for us and talk about who's benefiting from all this. And here is Peter Phillips to introduce our first guest. Peter?
Our first guest is Dr. David Himmelstein. He's a professor at City University of New York School of Public Health at Hunter College, visiting professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. His research includes healthcare, finance, policy, health services research, healthcare inequality, and social justice. Dr. Himmelstein is the co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Program, where he edits their newsletter. And one of his more notable studies has been shows that 45,000 deaths annually occur because people lack health insurance, and that 62% of all personal bankruptcies in the country are related to medical bills and illnesses. Dr. Himmelstein, are you with us?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. First off, let's start right off with President Obama's affordable health care. What are the main components of that, and then how is this evolving under the Medicare plans in the United States?
Well, there were two major pieces of how they're going to expand coverage. One is expanding Medicaid, which the Supreme Court ruled the states can decide to participate in that or not. And the second is basically requiring people to buy private insurance with some federal government subsidies to help people afford it who are on the low end of the income spectrum. If you're above 400% of poverty, you just have to buy the coverage. There's no help for it. And then they're going to set up some what they're calling insurance exchanges to help people shop for this coverage. But basically, there was a huge boost, hundreds of billions of dollars over the next decade, given to private insurers by the federal government saying, you have to buy their defective product. Now, since they passed it, we've actually seen walking back on some of the best promises of the legislation. So the administration is now saying to states, well, it will give you federal money to expand Medicaid, and you can use that to fully privatize your Medicaid program. So instead of having Medicaid be a public program, they're saying, well, you can use those new federal dollars to just buy private insurance for these new Medicaid recipients. And the problems with that are manifold, including the fact that we know that's more expensive than Medicaid doing it itself, and the coverage is likely to be much worse than Medicaid coverage because Medicaid has had virtually no copayments, no deductibles, and private insurance has big holes there. The second piece of Medicaid that the administration has gone back on is they're now relaxing restrictions on copayments and deductibles, not just for the new coverage under Medicaid, but for existing coverage. So they're saying even very poor people may have to pay copayments and deductibles if the states decide they want to do that. And that's really a horrendous problem. On the insurance side, when they actually then specified what that insurance has to cover, the coverage is incredibly skimpy that they're saying people are going to have. So on average, it has to cover only 60% of the health care costs of people who get the new private insurance under these plans. And just to give you a sense of what that means, in Massachusetts, where the plan has really been in effect for the last 5 years or so, the minimum coverage is 70% coverage, so it's better than that federal minimum. But that 70% coverage means you've got a $2,000 deductible before any costs are paid. And after that, you pay 20% of the medical bills up to $4,000.
Dr. Hemelstein, we're going to call you right back. They're static on this line. Once we reach Dr. Hemelstein, we're really going to ask this question, because last week, Obama's budget slashed Social Security and Medicare. So this is a major change for the Democrats in the United States. And the budget proposes to slash $400 billion from Medicare over the next 10 years. And a new adjustment in the cost of living procedures for Social Security will, in fact, cut $130 billion from benefits over the same period. So this is a really major kind of issue in terms of, you know, benefits from the federal government to the American citizens in the U.S., major cuts in Social Security, major cuts in Medicare, that's medical insurance for the elderly that we're faced with, and this push for privatization. That's an increased involvement of private insurance companies to the tune of billions and billions of dollars. And we're seeing these insurance companies like United Health, WellPoint, Aetna and Coventry, Cigna, receiving billions of dollars in increased payments. Plus, because of these adjustments, their stock values have massively increased over the last 2 weeks. And so what we're seeing is almost a private corporate bonanza in terms of the health insurance companies. Dr. Hemelstein, we have you back. Okay. I was just saying how the Obama administration is now proposing $400 billion in Medicare spending cuts over the next decade. How does this tie into some of the adjustments they've been making with the Affordable Care Act?
Well, at the same time that they've just said they want to cut Medicare, they've just had a huge giveaway to the private insurance companies in the Medicare Advantage plan. So Secretary Sebelius overruled her own actuaries who said that they ought to cut the premiums paid to private Medicare HMOs. So when Medicare enrollees choose a private Medicare HMO, Medicare pays their premiums. And the Medicare actuary said you ought to cut them by 2.3%, and Sebelius overruled them and instead gave them a 3.3% rise. And that basically negates the promise in the ACA that they would cut the long-time overpayment of these plans, which has been extraordinarily profitable for the biggest insurers. So next year alone, that's a $7.5 billion giveaway to the biggest insurers. Just to give you a sense, they just gave United Healthcare $1.5 billion next year, and Humana $1.4 billion, WellPoint $217 million. So while they're cutting back Medicare enrollees are proposing to, they're giving away massive amounts to the private insurance plans. And this is a pattern in this administration over the last 2 years since the legislation has been passed. They've been giving away the store.
We're speaking with Dr. David Hemelstein, professor at CUNY School of Public Health at Hunter College, co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Program. And today we're focusing on health care, and we're looking at why people in the U.S. continue to pay more for health care than any other industrialized country. And Dr. David Hemelstein just outlined at least some of the reason why that's happening. This, as Peter called it, a bonanza, a corporate giveaway, privatization. It sounds like there's a lot more money being given out than health care, Dr. Hemelstein.
Massive amounts of money being given away and profits being made. Shareholders who are walking away with billions, I mean, just last week, the stocks of the big insurance company rose by $13 billion after the Sebelius announced this giveaway. And also massive bureaucracy, because making this profit and sorting out who's a profitable patient from an unprofitable one, that's administratively complex and expensive. So $400 billion each year, billion, is wasted in useless bureaucracy, paperwork in the U.S., which is the cost of keeping our private insurance companies in business. Now, not all of that is just the private insurance companies, because part of it is their overhead, but a part of it is also that every hospital, every doctor's office also is dealing with this massive paperwork and has its staff to try and sort out patients according to who's profitable and who's not, and to fight with insurance companies over payments. So we're throwing away in this country hundreds of billions of dollars each year just to keep our for-profit companies at the trough of the healthcare system.
Well, Dr. Himmelstein, let's turn our attention, instead of talking about the health of the stock portfolios of people at these insurance companies, let's talk about the health of the American public, and let's talk about some other plans. And under a national plan, can we afford to cover everybody under a national plan, for example, like single payer? And what do most physicians in the public support?
Well, we could clearly afford a single-payer national health insurance plan that would cover everyone with comprehensive coverage. I mean, if you look around the world, we're spending almost twice as much as the average country in Europe or Canada, and we're getting much less for it, and that's because of the money we're throwing away. So, yeah, we could have first-dollar coverage for everybody in this country if we stop subsidizing the profits of the giant corporations here. And what that means is we could vastly improve the health of the American public. I mean, we need to do more than just give them first-dollar coverage. We need to actually address social problems outside of healthcare as well. But healthcare, universal, real universal healthcare, could go a long way towards improving the health of our people. We died 2 years earlier than people in Canada or people in most of Western Europe. Our infant mortality rate is about 50% higher than in most of the other developed nations that we compare ourselves to. And we're spending so much more, but we're getting so much less. So, if we had a simple single-payer system, Canada has one example of it. There are a couple of others that it'd be reasonable to, where everybody is covered under a single plan that basically says you've got first-dollar coverage, and instead of hospitals billing for each Band-Aid and aspirin tablet, we pay them like a fire department is paid, one check each month, and that eliminates massive bureaucracy and billing apparatus. Just to give you a sense of that, when I first moved to Boston, I went by Massachusetts General Hospital, big 900-bed hospital there. They had 350 people in the billing department to send to collect their money. And when we went by, visited a friend at Toronto General Hospital, same size hospital, that hospital had three people in its billing department whose main job was to send bills to Americans who wander across the border. And that means that you can actually have more people taking care of patients and fewer people taking care of the bills. And that's what we need in this country.
Well, what we see is, from your studies, that 45,000 people die prematurely every year. Some studies have shown up to 100,000. So people are literally, it's costing their lives, their health, to continue to subsidize private insurance companies in the United States to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, actually. So what you're saying, it seems, Dr. Himmelstein, is that we could very easily afford and even save money by having a single-payer health care system, and people would get better care.
Absolutely, and it's not just me who says that. In fact, every time this has been studied back 25 years ago, it was studied by the Congressional Budget Office, the General Accountability Office, the Lewin Health Care Associates, which is owned by UnitedHealthcare, has done studies. They say single payer could cover everyone and actually save money because you save so much on the overhead and the profits and bureaucracy. And it's popular. I mean, every time the question has been asked by big polling organizations, ABC and USA Today, they find that about 60% of the American people say they want a system like Medicare covering everyone for all needed medical expenses. And when we ask that among doctors as well, about 55-60% of doctors favor that kind of system. And I think one of the things that's quite striking is when it was asked in Massachusetts of Massachusetts doctors who have seen the Obama plan in action for more than 5 years now, the first choice of Massachusetts doctors is single payer by far. And only a very small group think that the Obama plan, like, I mean, we call it Romney Care in Massachusetts, that Romney Care is actually working well there. So we know it can be done. I mean, I think the other thing that's quite striking is we're already spending more in government dollars on healthcare in the United States than Canada spends on its entire healthcare system. So we have a publicly funded healthcare system that is being ripped off by private companies, and that's what we need to end.
So how does that happen? If 60% of the people or more support a single-payer health care for all, the doctors are in favor of it, why doesn't this happen? Why can't we get this approved through Congress and really address these issues?
Well, I think we have a lot of examples of things that most people in this country want and that our government won't actually do, and that's because we have a government that's to a large extent controlled by corporate money. On the other hand, I'm old enough to remember that large social movements and popular movements can make a change in this country, and we can make progressive change, but it takes organizing and it takes a huge upswelling of public sentiment expressed in the streets and in many other locales across the country. We need to organize and we need to gin up pressure, and that's the only way we're actually going to get social change. I mean, I think we've seen that you can have social change in this country. I mean, on gay marriage, we've had a landmark social change over the last 10 years in this nation, starting way back, but with the Massachusetts Supreme Court ruling when people said, gee, that's going way too far, and now it's commonplace. So we can have change, but it takes not just pressure, it takes an upswelling, almost an uprising.
Well, Dr. Himmelstein, also, there's proposed massive slashes to Medicare being proposed. A recent Pew Research poll found that 82% of the public opposed cuts in Medicare. And our next guest after you, Dr. Margaret Flowers, wrote a chapter in Project Censored's 2012 book on single payer singled out, on how it wasn't covered in the corporate media and how a majority of Americans, even though they have these views, they're not trumpeted from the corporate megaphones and the corporate media. And you just talked about we need a groundswell, we need a grassroots kind of movement, we need these silenced majorities. It's not that they're silent, but silenced majorities that don't have the media platforms. How do we go about, in your estimation, informing people about these things, educating people, and really mobilizing in a way to defeat the corporate lobbyists in Washington?
Well, I mean, the radio shows like yours are one component of that. We have a group of physicians for a national health program that's expanded enormously in the medical profession. We now have almost 19,000 members across the country and upwards of 50 chapters across the country, and we're doing grassroots outreach, and including outreach to the press, and we break through here and there, and frankly, we think we can break through much more in the future. So I don't think it's completely hopeless, but certainly we have an uphill struggle at this moment. But, you know, as Medicare starts to cut back and once people actually see what the Obama plan is in the healthcare system, I think you're going to see a a very rapid increase in dissatisfaction with what's being talked about. And at a certain point, even the mainstream media can't ignore what's actually going on in the country.
And it seems to us that Democrats can't ignore this either. Medicare Advantage is the private, inside Medicare, is the private insurance component of that, has just been massively funded for increased profits and the tunes of 80-some billion dollars. And at the same time, we're proposing a $400 billion cut in Medicare across the board over the next 10 years. Are the Democrats going to be able to stand for that?
Well, I guess the question is whether they're actually willing to sacrifice electability in the name of their corporate sponsors, and we'll have to see. I think if we hold their feet to the fire and say, you have a choice here, you can get elected and actually do things that are not what your corporate masters would want, or you can continue to rip off the American people for Medicare, HMOs, and other healthcare corporations. At least a significant element of the Democratic Party is smart enough to say we want to get elected. But we need to make that choice. We need to hold their feet to the fire on that. In Britain, I think an interesting development is there's a new party that's actually running candidates in their parliamentary elections, or has announced its plans to, outside of the Labour Party, outside of the existing parties, based on the National Health Service, saying both of the major parties have abandoned their traditional National Health Service, and they can't trust either of them. They're running a National Health Service party to bring back the National Health Service from the ravages that both their Labor Party and their Conservative Party have inflicted on it.
Dr. Himmelstein, we only have about a minute and a half left in this segment, and it's a very deep and complicated subject for many. One of the problems we see is many Americans don't even understand the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. They don't necessarily there's a lot of unanswered questions, and the corporate media really helps obfuscate that. And given the fact that we have 62% of personal bankruptcies linked to medical bills or illness, and almost 80% of those people bankrupt that had insurance when they first became sick, this is a huge financial affair in the United States. And where would you send people to help deconstruct this and understand this more clearly and understand how these problems are connected to many other issues in our society? So where would you send people to help start understanding these complicated affairs that you know so much about?
Well, we have a lot of resources on the Physicians for a National Health Program website, pnhp.org. I think on the medical debt side of things, there's a group that's an outgrowth of Occupy that's been doing really wonderful, interesting work called Strike Debt. And you can, if you Google them, you'll find them. And they've been highlighting both medical debt and student debt and housing debt as something that's hammering the American people. I think those two sources would be the first ones I'd go to. And unfortunately, when we studied bankruptcy in Massachusetts after the Massachusetts plan, we found it hadn't changed at all. So we don't think it's going to change under Obamacare. And unfortunately, the American people will find that out too late.
Dr. David Himmelstein, professor at CUNY School of Public Health at Hunter College, co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Program, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
After a short musical break, we will be back with Dr. Margaret Flowers and continue the discussion on U.S. healthcare. Please stay with us. Welcome back. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. That's the music of Preston Reed. We continue here our theme of U.S. health care and health issues. But Peter Phillips and I are going to do some Project Censored news, what we call validated independent news. Project Censored has been around for 37 years. We're working on our next annual book right now on the most underreported stories. And what we do is research these stories, and faculty and students from all over the U.S. contribute to the project. And here are some of the more recent stories we've been looking at, Peter.
These are from students and faculty researchers at Florida Atlantic University who have recently posted the following news reports at ProjectCensored.org. Laboratory study of rats supports dangers of GMO corn. A study published in September in the Food and Chemical Toxicology Journal found that rats fed Monsanto's genetically modified corn over several months show significant health problems, including premature death and tumors. The study found that over half of the male rats and 70% of the females who were fed a lifetime of Monsanto's corn died prematurely with significant liver and kidney damage. Scientists also found that rats to contain cancerous tumors so large they blocked organ function. While numerous studies have examined the short-term impacts of GMOs, this is the first time ever study to examine the long-term effects of eating genetically modified foods.
In another story, pesticides may lead to cancer and autism in children. Pesticides are harmful to the health and intelligence of America's children, according to an October 2012 report released by the Pesticide Action Network of North America titled, A Generation in Jeopardy. The study notes how chemicals from pest control products are one key cause of a range of disorders such as ADHD, autism, cancer, disrupted metabolism, and even low IQs. The report notes that since 1975, childhood cancer has risen 25%, while autism is up 78% from 2002. The study shows that organophosphate pesticides block enzymes that control neurotransmitters. As a result, neurons misfire, inhibiting nervous system function and proper brain development.
In another study, the world's largest drug companies are encouraging pregnant women to take prescription drugs, get vaccine shots, and even have chemotherapy. Among these are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors or antidepressants, which are causing miscarriages and a variety of birth defects. Excessive prescription drugs used in pregnant women is also linked to the increase of babies born with autism, preterm birth, newborn behavioral syndrome, persistent pulmonary hypertension of the newborn, and long-term neurobehavioral effects. All of these validated news stories can be viewed at www.projectcensored.org.
Thank you, Peter. We're continuing our discussion on U.S. healthcare and how people in the U.S. are paying more and more for healthcare than any other industrialized country. Though, as if you joined our first segment with Dr. David Himmelstein, learned that many people are not benefiting from this. In fact, many of the insurance companies are profiting from this wildly. And we're going to continue this discussion and what we can do about this problem with our next guest. Our next guest is Dr. Margaret Flowers. She's a pediatrician from Baltimore who served as Congressional Fellow for PNHP, which we discussed previously. She's on the Board of Healthcare Now and on the Coordinating Committee of the Maryland Healthcare is a Human Right Campaign. She's co-director of It'sOurEconomy.us and co-host of ClearingTheFogRadio.org. Dr. Margaret Flowers, thanks for joining the Project Censored Show once again.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
You contributed a chapter to the Censored 2012 book, Single Payer, Singled Out, talking about how single payer wasn't covered in the corporate media very well. So that actually might be a good place just to take off is it's difficult to have open dialogue about these key issues when many people are unaware of them.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, there have been studies that have shown that actually the media tends to portray single-payer health reform in a negative way. They use pejorative terms. Despite that negative attention, we still find in polling data that the majority of Americans support moving to a national single-payer health system. So that's surprising to me. But then, you know, there's a lot of myths that are out there that we have to constantly address when it comes to single-payer.
Dr. Flowers, this is Peter Phillips with Project Censored. You have written that Obama healthcare is helping to actually has slowed the growth of healthcare costs. Now, apparently that's true, but you're saying that there's really another symptom here, that ailing market-based healthcare system is causing poor health outcomes and growing inequality. So we're not really saving any money. They're just getting, people are getting sicker.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the president's last State of the Union address, he attributed our slowing health care spending to the Affordable Care Act. And in fact, our slowed health care spending began prior to the passage of the Affordable Care Act. It started in 2009 after the economic downturn. And what we attribute it to and what the data seems to show is that Americans are actually using fewer health services. They're self-rationing because more and more of the cost of health care is getting shifted onto the individual. So for people who have insurance, they have to pay their health insurance premiums. Then they may have to pay copays and meet deductibles before their insurance will actually even kick in. So for some people, they have very high, you know, multiple thousands of dollars deductibles before their health insurance benefits even begin. And that is serving as a barrier, a financial barrier to getting actual care. So fewer people are seeing a doctor, fewer people are taking their prescription medicines. There was a study just released this morning showing the number of people that they fill their prescriptions, but then they're cutting back on the doses, trying to make their prescriptions last longer. And it's estimated that because of that, and the fact that then people have worse consequences, which may cause them to require more care, it costs us an extra $290 billion a year just because people are skimping on their prescription medication. So what we're finding is that our health care costs are slowing, our spending is slowing. So, primarily because people aren't getting the care they need.
So this is a story similar to one of a local family friend who's ignored the symptoms of cancer and waited until, you know, finally going to the doctor and finding out that he was stage four. You know, and so that not only costs more to treat, but we're seeing people really self-control attending to doctors when, in fact, their health is at risk. And studies now show that over 100,000 deaths are preventable in the U.S. annually if that weren't the case. So where do we go from here, Dr. Flowers?
Well, the Affordable Care Act, and I'm sure you discussed this with Dr. Himmelstein previously, is not a solution. It's not something that can be tweaked into an actual functional health care system. It actually takes us further in the direction of privatizing our health care system. And that's where the U.S. really differs from other countries around the world, is that we've used a market-based approach to health care for the last 40 years. Other countries use some sort of a universal national publicly financed health system. And as a result of our market-based system, we're paying 2.5 times more per person per year on health care than what the other nations spend, and our health outcomes are poor. So it's time for us really to go with what the evidence shows works. I look at this as a failed experiment. If this was, you know, an experiment being done, you know, as a research project, we would have to stop it ethically because it's really clear what the consequences are. It's more suffering, more death. So we could move immediately to a Medicare for All, just expand our current traditional Medicare, not the privatized portion, but the traditional Medicare to every person living inside the U.S., continue to finance that publicly, and then that would put us on the track towards actually building a health system that's based on people's health and their needs and not on corporate profits.
Dr. Flowers, it's also the case that, well, you discussed the issue of privatization. And if we go across the board and we look at things with privatization in education has led to calamitous effects.
Right.
Even Diane Ravitch, who once supported the privatization efforts and the No Child Left Behind efforts, once looking at the evidence, turned sides and said this is the wrong direction and these are mistakes. Privatization in the military and contracting, we've seen that lead to inefficiency and all kinds of other disasters there. Here we are in healthcare seeing the same kind of impacts of privatization. So this is a broader topic of
right.
that. But when we look at something like Affordable Care Act, that's AKA Obamacare, right?
Right.
That's the moniker that's been given to it politically, I suppose. Is it true in your estimation that the Affordable Care Act has extended care to people that would never have gotten it? In other words, what would you say might be a positive impact of this? Not single payer, of course. This is not the single payer solution, but this was like the middle of the road solution that opened the door as a Trojan horse for further privatization. But was there some positive effect that lured some to support it?
Well, there's always something positive in these laws or they would never get passed. You know, they have to put something good in there. I mean, I guess some of the good parts of the Affordable Care Act is that it provided a lot more funding for community health centers, which are really, you know, our safety net centers. But what we're going to be finding if we look at, you know, the overall picture, some people are going to have insurance under the Affordable Care Act that did not have insurance previously. But what it has done is it has put into law that it's okay for people to have insurance plans that are grossly inadequate, that cover maybe 60% or 70% of their covered services. These are levels that still create huge financial barriers to care and that lead to the poor outcomes. We really need to remove these financial barriers so that people, when they need health care, they can go and get it early, get treated before things get into a serious situation and that have worse outcomes and are more expensive. So we have to look at the whole kind of trend, and it's exactly what you described, kind of these neoliberal economic policies of defunding our public programs and then pushing greater privatization. So we're seeing, in terms of the Affordable Care Act, people are going to be forced to, you know, purchase private insurance, but it will be a low-level insurance. And in terms of our final numbers, you know, after all of this work of passing this bill, how many people are going to be covered? Our uninsured numbers have been running about 50 million a year. The Congressional Budget Office about a year ago estimated that 30 million people would still be uninsured when the Affordable Care Act was fully implemented in 2019. And then following that with the Supreme Court decision, which means that states are not required to expand their Medicaid programs, we may see millions more people on top of that 30 million that don't receive Medicaid. So we're not making a huge dent in the health problem that we have, and it's not going to be controlling the cost of health care that's continuing to rise. So it's really not a solution, even though a few people are going to be having insurance underneath it. Still, tens of millions will be without, and tens of millions more will not be able to get the care they need because they can't afford it.
So, Dr. Flowers, I think what I'm hearing you say is that health care is actually a decline and that people are paying more, and that we now know that some like two-thirds of the bankruptcies in the country are because people have been bankrupt because of health care. And a vast majority, 80% of those actually had insurance when they got sick.
Right.
So we've got this terribleness that's really emerging around health care in this country. And then we have the smoke and mirrors of the Obama budget that was just released,
right,
where they're going to have the chained CPI. In other words, they're going to change how the cost of living index is computed for Medicare. That's going to cost tens of billions of dollars in cuts. So how does that going to work?
Right. Well, the new budget is proposing changes to both Social Security and Medicare, and these are things that we've seen coming down the road for several years now. I mean, you know that Obama appointed the National Commission for Fiscal Responsibility and Reform back in April of 2010 and was working with the Pete Peterson Foundation, which actually paid for staffers for that commission, a private foundation that's dedicated to gutting our social insurances. And so these same proposals that have kind of came through the super committee, the president is now putting into his budget. And we already have, when it comes to Social Security, a poverty retirement. The Social Security levels are grossly inadequate for many people because our kind of retirement system has deteriorated. Pensions are not any longer guaranteed. You know, corporations are legally allowed to loot the pensions of their employees. And the kind of retirement in the stock exchange, that doesn't really work for people anymore either. So the strongest leg of our retirement system is our Social Security, and now that's being gutted even further. But when we look at Medicare, the president has been kind of moving in the direction of, which is what Paul Ryan wants to do, of voucherizing Medicare. So we heard Jonathan Gruber just, I think it was a few months ago at the National Press Club, saying that within 5 years, he thinks that Medicare should be put into the health insurance exchanges, where people with Medicare will get a certain amount of money. Premium support is what they call it, because they don't want to call it vouchers, because people don't like vouchers. Seniors would get premium support to go into the health insurance exchanges and purchase private insurance. We know that's not going to work. Medicare functions much better than our private insurance system does, but that's kind of the direction that we're going. Also, I think people should be aware that in this budget, the president is proposing that when it comes to Medicare, the deductibles for Part A and Part B be merged, so that about 80% of seniors don't go into the hospital each year. They just use outpatient care, but they'll now be required to meet the same deductibles as seniors who use the hospital. This is going to be another financial barrier to care for our senior population.
Dr. Flowers, again, Peter and I are educators. We can't help but see all these parallels in education with both right. teachers, curriculum control, lack of access of students, diminishing access, increased student debt. I mean, if you just change a few of the variable words here, we're having similar discussions about the same subjects in many cases.
Absolutely.
Doesn't it seem that if the American public was more aware of how these dots were connected and this was a full-on privatizing assault against things that we have come to believe are our rights over the late 20th century, perhaps there would be a chance to have more mobilization. We posed this question earlier to Dr. Himmelstein. Given the drumbeat and the top-down corporate managed news propaganda that bewilders people, what are the antidotes to this? I mean, clearly at Project Censored, we do this, and we know you're out there and your organizations, but what would you hand to people in terms of a toolbox is a way to navigate some of these very complicated areas in healthcare, Medicare, etc. If you had to sit down and you had 5 minutes with someone that was, you know, not so aware and just was engaged but had many questions, where might you point them?
Point them in terms of where they could go to get information?
Yes.
I think it's really important to recognize that the corporate media is just a propaganda arm for these corporations that are pushing these policies of privatization and defunding of our public institutions. And so, you know, that's why we started Clearing the Fog Radio to try to get the information out. That's why you have Project Censored to get this real information out. I think, you know, those are good sources. We get most of our news, you know, through internet outlets that are not, you know, not private, not corporate. So things like Truth Out and Truth Dig, that are good sites to go to. But I'm excited in terms of what is happening around the country, because people are starting to make these connections. We were just invited and spoke at the University of Maine last weekend, where they formed a number of groups that advocate for different issues, came together as the Maine Alliance for the Common Good, and held a weekend-long conference to look at ways that they could work together and build, you know, kind of build alternative systems that would meet their needs outside of kind of the corporate system, which has a dual purpose of both, you know, providing employment and bringing wealth to a community to meet their human needs, but also build systems that aren't feeding into kind of this corporate machine that we have going on right now, to hopefully at some point start to weaken that. And there's a lot happening around the human rights framework. You know, as you mentioned, I'm co-chair of on the coordinating council of the Maryland Healthcare as a Human Right campaign, where we're doing community organizing and education to help people understand that they have human rights that are being violated, and how it also educates about how social change occurs. We're hoping to build a grassroots movement that understands what their rights are and how they can achieve them.
Dr. Flowers, Project Censored a few years ago did a study on healthcare, and one of the things we looked at was how private insurance companies deny benefits just openly, even though the benefits are valid, delay services, diminish services, and in many cases actually try to blame the people who are sick for getting sick. So that seems to be this kind of strategy that happens in private industry. Whereas in public health, or you go in, you're sick, you're taken care of, and things are you try to make you better. So where are we going with this? I mean, obviously, Physicians for National Health Care are active and engaged. You've got a student summit happening May 10th in Chicago. You've got your national board meeting May 18th in Minneapolis. Is there hope to try to reverse this whole privatization process that we're faced with over the next over this current Congress?
Well, I mean, there's definitely hope, mainly because people are really waking up and starting to make these connections. And one of the other websites that we run is the Occupy Washington, D.C. website, where we publish what's going on in the resistance movement around the country and around the world each day, and send out a weekly newsletter on that. There's a lot happening, you know, students that are standing up and fighting back. We worked with the strike debt rolling jubilee that came out of Occupy Wall Street, which did it. They're buying up medical debt and forgiving it, and teaching, you know, providing communities with tools to fight debt. So there's a lot that's happening. In particular, you know, after I served as Congressional Fellow for Physicians for National Health Program, it became pretty clear to me that working through the political system at this point is not a successful strategy, because it just really is dominated by these corporate interests. They're not interested in evidence of what works. And so we need to see healthcare as part of this broader struggle for social and economic justice, and do form these alliances and work together. It needs to be, you know, one part of protesting, to expose what's going on, to try to stop things that we can. But the bigger part is to start working to build up these alternative systems that start to bring more wealth into communities, because with this huge wealth disparity, there just can't be any hope of us coming up against these moneyed interests. We need to start building democratized economic institutions, and so that's why our other project is It's Our Economy.us, to help support people that are doing that kind of work as well.
So, Margaret Flowers, we have several websites here. We have the physicians website, the PNHP website, the Physicians for National Health Program. So that's PNHP.org.
Yes.
You also have itsoureconomy.us and clearingthefogradio.org.
That's correct. Right. And then if people want to see what's going on with the resistance movement, you can go to Occupy Washington, D.C. OccupyWashingtonDC.org.
And a note to end on, Obama, excuse me, Obama budget slashes Social Security, Medicare. There was a recent article by Andre Damon, Information Clearinghouse, and the World Socialist website. And the conclusion here by Andre Damon seems is where we're culminating with the program. It's Andre says, while Obama has boasted that he has already implemented $2.5 trillion in deficit reduction, these cuts have up to this point avoided entitlement spending. Now, the ruling class, through the medium of the two big business parties, is barreling ahead with their plans to gut the bedrock programs of the U.S. social safety net. This drive inevitably puts the entire political system on a collision course with the demands of the population and must lead to mass political upheavals.
That's what we can hope for. I mean, it's sad. We were just commenting the other day that the same kind of neoliberal policies that the U.S. has inflicted on other countries through the International Monetary Fund are now being inflicted here at home. There was an announcement that the president's included wanting to sell the Tennessee Valley Authority to private energy corporations. So it is the time for people to rise up and get involved and do something about what's happening in this country.
Dr. Margaret Flowers, thank you as always for your work, and thanks so much for spending some time with us here at the Project Censored Show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Peter, a few announcements.
Wednesday, April 17th at Sonoma State University, Keith McHenry, founder of Food Not Bombs, will be speaking about Elect to End Hunger and Poverty. This is at 7 p.m. at the Multipurpose Room in the Student Union Building. It's free to all who would like to attend. Keith McHenry is just back from visiting Food Not Bomb actions in Indonesia and the Philippines.
Thanks to Kirsten Thomas and Anthony Fest, and also my co-host Peter Phillips. See you next week.